Hey everyone, Mark here. Fun sidetrack this week. We are talking cover songs. Specifically, we each bring three of our favorite cover versions to show the other. Some surprises, some maybe not so surprising. Anyways, enjoy. You wanted to talk about covers.
I wanted to talk about your favorite cover songs.
So when you said that, and I'm down, definitely down to talk covers. My original response was like, what are the rules?
Yeah, you had a lot of questions about rules.
Because it's like, there could be a cover version of a super famous song that is then become super famous.
Sure.
Or there's a cover version of a not famous song that becomes super famous where that we almost don't realize it's a cover. And in my head, for the purpose of this conversation, it's more fun if the original is well known. You know what I mean? Because then people have a basis of comparison.
Well, I think that that's when I think of a cover song, like I have to know it's a cover song for me to quantify it as a cover.
Right.
Like there are a lot of Beatles songs that are cover songs that I didn't know were covers because I only know the Beatles version.
You don't know the original version of Mr. Moonlight or whatever.
Whatever.
Or Twist and Shout or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Twist and Shout maybe.
Yeah, sure,
but
sure,
like,
sure. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think of it as a cover song. I think of it as a Beatles song. So I wouldn't have even had it in my head for this conversation.
We did the Ace of Base episode and you were surprised. I was certainly surprised. Don't Turn Around. Tina Turner had done it originally. Like,
right.
Our conception around that song had nothing to do with it being anything but an Ace of Base original.
Exactly.
Right?
So like when I think of a cover song, for me, I need both versions to be well known or it's not a cover. So what's your...
I would say I haven't followed that completely.
That's okay.
So I ultimately, your answer of why are you asking about rules for this just led me to just go with favorites, right?
Yeah,
I
favorites.
Went with favorites.
You're overthinking.
And one of my favorites is also a response to you, yours. Because listeners, I prep the audio. So I got the spoilers of what her favorites are, though I don't know what she's going to say about them. She has no idea where I'm going with this,
no.
Although she knows me well enough to probably be able to predict every single one I've done. But
so,
yeah,
okay. So, can I tell you some of my favorite cover songs?
Well, are you going to give me the three or do we have any space for like, I feel like not honorable mentions, but what are the ones people think we're going to say? What do you think people would be like? Oh, they're obviously going to talk about this. What are like the most famous cover versions?
Oh, interesting.
I did a little bit of thinking and wrote some down.
What
but
do you
like,
have?
Because I think really... we are more deep diving.
I don't
than
think
that.
Anyone's going to guess mine.
If they're tracking previous conversations.
Yeah, maybe.
Actually,
they might.
Possibly
yeah.
They have. But, you know, All Along the Watchtower, Bob Dylan, done by Jimi Hendrix. Big one. Respect.
Yeah.
Aretha, but that's an Otis Redding tune. I think that's one where the Aretha version's way more famous, though. Nothing Compares to You. Well, actually, no. People don't know that was a cover.
I didn't know that was a cover.
Sinead O'Connor, of course. It's a Prince song, like a little-known Prince song.
Oh, Prince.
Yeah.
Is it
just in general? Yeah. Proud Mary, right? Originally Creedence, and then I Can Tina Turner.
Mm-hmm.
With a little help from my friends. That's one that, if it wasn't so obvious, I might have chosen that.
Because
that is just... That's a great case where it's so transformatively good, the Joe Cocker version. But also, that's the best Ringo song. That's an excellent song.
It's a great song. Also, the Tracy Chapman song that was just covered by Luke Combs.
Oh, Luke Combs, Fast
that, like,
Car, yeah.
Is great. Like, I love the Tracy Chapman version, but the Luke Combs version has, like, a grit to it that is... It really affects you when you listen to it. So.
Right, totally. We already mentioned in another podcast, don't know when it's airing, but Killing Me Softly.
Mm-hmm.
Roberta Flack, and then Fugees.
Yeah.
And I Will Always Love You, Whitney and Dolly Parton.
So, okay, covers.
You go first. So your first one.
A lot of my covers are because they're hugely sentimental to me. And that's no surprise if you've been listening. Like I do attach my memories a lot to music.
So favorite, not best.
Favorite in that. And I think that they're pretty good, too.
Sure, sure.
So my first one I think you have queued up is Nirvana.
Yeah.
The Man Who Sold the World, which is a David Bowie cover that they did, I don't think on an album, but definitely on the Unplugged New York album that they put out, which is one of my favorite, I'll say Nirvana albums, even though that might not be true.
So that's also like the one that we were around for. Like we were around for all of it, but I was like 8 or whatever when Nevermind, or like, you know, whereas this, we were 12. Like we could watch that on MTV.
And like kind of understand the nuance of Kurt Cobain and like understand, especially when you saw him perform the song, you could like see his affect and see his mood. And it I'm not going to say it like sparked me into the study of psychology, but it was just one of those first moments I remember thinking, what's going on inside this guy's head when he's singing the song? And that's like, for me, a really powerful moment, and it makes it one of my favorite covers of all time.
That album and that concert also tons of covers.
Three
Meat Puppets songs, and you know, famously, Nirvana's part of Kurt Cobain's deal was turning people on to other bands, and so people knew David Bowie beforehand, of
for
course.
Sure. So let's hear some clips.
So here's the Bowie chorus.
Sure.
Nirvana.
Oh no, not me. We never lost control. The face to face of the man who sold the world.
Yeah, I just love that the guitar at the end of that clip, like how it is, it feels so much more dissonant and so much grittier. Than the Bowie version. I don't get me wrong. I'm a very big David Bowie fan. I think obviously he's a mastermind. But something about this one song, I love Nirvana's treatment of it even more than the Bowie version. The Bowie version feels, as much as Bowie can, like really sterile to me.
Yeah.
And the Nirvana version has like this grit that was really appealing to me at that time in my life and just made me realize like, oh, this guy's like got something special that you don't see every day. So that's one of mine.
Totally.
And what's like, one of your?
I should note also, like I mentioned, oh, well, he brought in some unknown artists or whatever. Like people didn't really know the Meat Puppets. Now everybody knows the Meat Puppets. People didn't know this Bowie song.
No.
So this Bowie song was not a single. It's from an album called The Man Who Sold the World, but 1970, not one of the singles. So
I didn't know it was a cover until years later.
Totally. Totally.
Until I got really into Bowie and like deep dived into him. I was like, oh, I remember the song from that Nirvana concert. Yeah. Like,
and
that's
I think he
crazy.
Says this is a David Bowie song on
For
it, but
sure,
I
but...
didn't know that. I probably saw the MTV thing once and then just heard the song a bunch.
Well, that's me too.
Later
yeah.
without the context of the concert, mm-hmm. right? All right, so I'll go. I'm going to talk about the Moody Blues song.
Oh, yes.
Your Wildest Dreams. Do you know this one?
I know. Moody Blues is a special place in my heart for sure.
Really?
For sure. So, I listened to it a lot, like in high school with some really good friends.
Like
yeah.
Nights in White Satin.
Yes, that. Yeah.
So Moody Blues, art rock band, sort of psychedelic, but proggy, like not proggy like Rush, more proggy like a lot of classical music.
Yeah, they
it.
Like feel clean, like a cleaner Pink Floyd almost.
Sure, I can see that. So this is an example of a song that where I talk about this in my songwriting class a lot and my music production class, that you have to differentiate production from songwriting. They're separate. Mm-hmm. You might like a song because of its the way it's written or performed or how it's produced. And this is an example of a song that doesn't really do it for me in its production in the original sense. But then when you hear this cover, it's like, oh my God, that song is so beautiful because of the way it's performed. So this is a song, Your Wildest Dreams, from 1986, The Other Side of Life, which is not the sort of classic era of the band. But, you know, this song was a single, relatively well known at the time. And it's called Your Wildest Dreams. And well, let me play you what the song sounds like. And then I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to surprise you maybe about what the cover version is.
And that's so it's such a great song, but it's not super representative of the Moody Blues.
Super synthy.
Yeah,
synth-pop.
And not yeah. as like theatrical as like a Nights in White Satin.
So I'm so positive you don't know what this is that I'm just going to play it and then I'll explain it.
Okay.
And I remember skies reflected in your eyes. I wonder where you are. I wonder if you think about
I actually do know that's from Kermit the Frog from Emmett Otter's jug band Christmas.
Kermit the Frog.
No, it's like what John are you Denver talking about? Or something. Like, I have no idea.
So the singer is Harley Allen, is the lead vocalist, a country singer. So have we talked about Pandora, the app, at all on this podcast?
No, we haven't.
Do you know that? Do you, Nicole, the audience does not know that I used to work for that.
I didn't.
Company.
What After would you I, do?
They were not called Pandora yet. And Pandora, I know I signed an NDA.
Uh-oh.
I'm allowed to say this much. No, I'm not, because what I was a music analyst. What I did was listen to the songs and turn it into numbers.
Nice.
So it would get plugged into the algorithm. This was, they were called back then Savage Beast Technologies.
Oh.
Because music soothes the savage beast.
Okay.
It hadn't yet turned into an app. This was
cool.
My first job out of college. I would listen to album after album after album.
And say, this sounds like John Denver. Well, this sounds
This is what the NDA won't let me talk about. Oh. But I would basically convert what I'm hearing kind of almost from a music theory element into numbers that the algorithm would then send.
Oh,
okay, so you like this song. It would then, wasn't connecting it to other songs. The algorithm would take the data I put and match it to other songs.
Way to take the fun out of listening to music.
Well, it was really oppressive to be there for a long session and just listen and convert.
I bet.
But the end result, you know, it had to happen. Nowadays, maybe an AI bot would do that work.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
It would probably be at what cost?
So worked in the Savage Beast situation?
There is a phase between like 2004 and 2006 or whatever where random stuff I was hearing. I had this weird pipeline where basically a CD would be dropped on the desk and I would listen to it. And so what gets dropped on my desk? Moody Bluegrass, a Nashville tribute to the Moody Blues.
Ooh.
You've heard of these tribute albums where they do like a string quartet doing Metallica or whatever. Like,
yeah,
there are a lot of these where it's sort of bluegrassy tributes to like rock bands.
Oh, I love like
sarcastic.
Neutral. I talked about Neutral Uke Hotel before.
Oh, yeah. You have mentioned that. Yeah.
I love
that's
it.
That's right. So this is a genre of things that's kind of phoned in and kind of random and not.
Mm-hmm.
This album is amazing. And so because I listened to the three songs I was required to do or whatever for the Pandora work. But then I checked out the album and like, oh, my God, if you like the Moody Blues at all. Or even if you've not heard them, this album, 2004, basically, they're just extremely emotional versions of these. Some of them are real bluegrass, where it's like fast. But this is just a country song. Let me play you a couple more clips just to demonstrate what I'm talking about. Okay. Here's the bridge of the tune. Becomes this.
When the music plays, and when the words are touched with sorrow, when the music plays, I hear the sound I had to follow once upon a time.
I like the bluegrass better.
It's just so sad.
And it's like
and beautiful.
Beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
Awesome.
And then we have to move on, but like they go on in their solos. It's bluegrass,
cool.
Right? This isn't. This is really more of a slow country, but there's these amazing they got like the best people in Nashville on this album doing these songs. That Moody Blues are great songwriters, but the flavor isn't for everybody, and it's just
I love that.
Check
Thanks
it
for
out.
Sharing that.
Check it out. Your turn. What do you
Okay. So the next cover that I've been really into lately, I'm a big fan of Sublime. I grew up in an era of Sublime dominance that me and my friends, all we did was listen to Sublime all day, every day. Like I could sing all of 40 Ounces to Freedom in my sleep. I won't, but I could. I really
love
the
song or the album?
The whole album.
Nice.
Like beginning
well
to end. It's
great.
Embedded in my subconscious. So I really like the song Doing Time by Sublime. And then I love Lana Del Rey's more modern cover of that song.
Mm.
And I'm sure Sublime covered Doing Time. I'm sure they took that from somebody along the way because they did that with a lot of their music.
Well, we're talking about it. Let's listen to their version for a second.
Yeah.
Summertime.
It's still so good. It really resonates. It like tickles a spot in my soul that not a lot of music does, just because it really pins to a very carefree time and place for me.
And that's 1997 from their self-titled, their last like album before Bradley Nowell died. But you ask, like, what is that? Well, yeah, this song is already kind of a cover.
It is.
It's an interpolation. Well, a sample, not just a sample, but it's a sample of a cover, essentially. So the song Summertime, George Gershwin, from the opera Porgy and Bess, that's a jazz standard. There's a version by Herbie Mann, who's a flute player.
Yes.
And then you can hear the flute and the vibraphone, and it's looping through it. So they like, the summertime line is really the only part that comes from it, but that sample is looping throughout it. So it's kind of like, almost like a cover. But anyway, so Lana Del Rey.
So then very recently, right, do you have the date on the Lana Del Rey covers this year, last year?
2019.
Okay.
COVID killed our...
COVID killed, that was a long time
ago,
I guess.
Fucking Rockwell is the name of the album.
The Lana Del Rey album?
Yeah.
Which I love because it's a call, but to me that summer, this song, Doing Time, is so nostalgic to me. And I think of, obviously, Norman Rockwell is a very nostalgic artist. But let's listen to the Lana Del Rey version of it.
All the people in the dance will agree that we're well qualified to represent the LBC.
So she like kept the bass line and she kind of took some of the motifs of the flute, the man flute that goes throughout the Sublime version, and adds it to the lyrics kind of intermittently throughout the song. I just think it's a lovely treatment of a song that I just really like anyway. And I love, for me, the Sublime version is like representative of my teenage years. And this version is very representative of my life in the, you know, 2020 era of like more subdued. And I just really relate to it lyrically anyway. So I just love that as a cover.
I think this preserves the spirit of the original while adding something new
in a really
nice way.
And she could have changed the lyrics. She could have taken Bradley out and LPC out, but she didn't. She kept it. And I think that that's a nice homage to him. I mean, Sublime is still touring, obviously not with Bradley, but they're still making new music and still touring, but it just doesn't hit the same as those old ones did. So, yeah.
All right, so let's hear another clip. Here's the Sublime original, later section.
Evil, ornery, scandalous, and evil. Most definitely the tension. It's getting hotter. I'd like to pull her head underwater.
And here's Lana.
Since she's changing it so much while keeping the integrity of the, what we'll call the original, the Sublime version, by keeping the bass line the same, keeping some of the synth the same, but like the way her lyrical treatment is so different and just, it's so haunting. It's just really, really lovely.
I think the meaning of that line. So like the line in the Sublime original is almost not a joke, but like a play on words. I'd like to hold her head underwater because of that long pause. She doesn't really do the pause. It's just, I'd like to hold her head underwater. I think the way I hear it, right? It's interesting. She's more straightforward. Because her lazier rhythm kind of makes it drag and flow as a line.
Yeah, she's changing the phrasing in a way that changes how you interpret the song. And I think it's just, I think that she's a very talented musician, just generally. I'm not as into her as I think I should be. But,
Same.
Like, I feel
same.
Like I should
be more.
I
love what I've heard. I don't know
like,
her
why can't I? And I love Fiona Apple. I love, like, her predecessors in that kind of space. And I just never got into her, but
it's
not too
late.
It's not too late. Never too late.
Same with Moody Bluegrass and Lana Del Rey, everybody.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Okay, okay, so what do you have next?
So this is where I have the unfair advantage where you asked me to pull clips of Lana Del Rey and I went, Sublime. Sublime has a lot of really great covers.
They do.
And there were actually a few that I was struggling between, but you mentioned 40 Ounce to Freedom, that album from 1992. And there's a cover of one of my favorite bands, Bad Religion, from their 1982 album, How Could Hell Be Any Worse. This is not one of my all-time favorite Bad Religion songs, but they just add so much to it. This is the original song called We're Only Gonna Die. So Sublime does it in their style. So we've got like a reggae rock style, but they honor certain aspects of the original. So let's just hear that section, super different, more, you know, mid-tempo reggae rock, not hardcore punk.
Early man walked away, it's not a man to control. Their minds were all the same, to conquer was their goal. So he built his great empire and he slaughtered his own kind. He died a confused man, killed himself with his own mind.
But then I'm spoiling it. I know what you're going to do because that's a great song. And then later in the song, they go back to the Bad Religion vibe.
The hardcore punk vibe.
That like is so converse to the whole rest of the Sublime album. They're like, oh, where did that come from? And it like triggers you as a listener to go back and realize like, oh, they took that from someone.
Yeah. Right? So the cool thing there, and there's a few songs on that that are like hardcore punk covers. Like there's a Descendants cover on that record also. But they do this tempo shift to the hardcore punk thing, and then when you look back on the original, I'll play it, the original Bad Religion one starts hardcore punk and then slows down, and cool. Sublime's doing the opposite. So awesome. Here's what Bad Religion does in the middle. And then they slow down to get there, whereas Sublime speeds up to meet in the same place.
It's so good, Mark. Yeah. Why are we not listening to Sublime every day?
We will.
Anymore?
We will. No, maybe not every day, but
anymore.
But I have to say that my favorite part of the song is the ending. I have to play one more clip. So Bad Religion ends super fast again. They go fast, medium, and then ends fast. And Sublime ends going back to the reggae. Not only that, but they add a line. So the line's about like, or the lyrics in this song are about like humans kind of ruining the world, right? Mm. We're destroying the world. This line, we're only going to die for our own arrogance. And then Bradley says, so we might as well take our time.
I love
which
it.
Just fits with their whole vibe.
Yeah. Poor Bradley. He didn't take his time, though, did he?
No, sadly. All right, we each got one more.
Okay, so I'm noticing a trend in kind of the process of this podcast, and this episode specifically. I'm kind of a sucker for flawed male singers. Like, I'm talking about Kurt Cobain. I'm talking about Bradley. And they were broken, right? Yeah. Maybe I thought I could fix them with my listenership. I didn't, obviously. Another flawed male singer that I'm really interested in is Ryan Adams, who's a really great songwriter and a really great singer. Not Bryan Adams, the Canadian songster.
He might be broken, though.
But, you know, with the Robin Hood Men in Tights or the Robin Hood
Men in Tights.
The regular Prince of Robin, Thieves. Prince of Thieves, whatever. Yeah. They're like pretty much the same. Hey, Blinken. Ryan Adams he's a broken individual. He's definitely came under a lot of heat after this post-Me Too era that thankfully we're living in now about his treatment of women in his life, specifically his ex-wife, Mandy Moore. But that's a whole other sidetrack that we're not going to go into. But I'm interested in him.
We're not going to just talk about This Is Us for 15 minutes
no,
right now?
No, I've never seen This Is Us. Okay. I can't.
She's good in it.
I hear that. Yeah. Yes, that's what everyone says.
Yeah.
I also talk in this podcast that I'm not going to call myself a Swiftie, but I appreciate Taylor Swift's music. And the first album that I got into that was Taylor Swift's was 1989, but it wasn't her version of it. Ryan Adams covered the whole album.
Wow, to that, not just him doing that, but that's your entry point.
Well,
into...
and that's because I liked Ryan Adams, and then like Spotify told me to like check this out. So I checked it out, and it was just, his voice was so haunting, and it really did make me fall in love with Taylor Swift's lyrics, because lyrically he was consistent, but the tone is very, very different. To now, if I've referred this album, Ryan Adams' 1989, to Taylor Swift fans, being like, oh, you have to check this out, and they hate it because it's so like sacrilegious to them. Like hardcore Swifties in my life are like, I couldn't even listen to it. It felt dirty to listen to it. So... I know you have a couple clips, so if you play a couple of them.
We'll go Taylor first. So this, by the way, is from 1989, which is 2014. Mm-hmm. Ryan Adams' version of 1989, only a year later, 2015.
Yeah. 'Cause the players gonna play, 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 play. And the haters gonna hate, 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 baby. I'm just gonna shake, 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 shake. Shake it off, shake it off. I mean, this was Taylor's more, I mean, she's gotten less, she's still pretty poppy, obviously. But this album was a really poppy album.
Pop.
And like the way it was produced was different than the way her more recent albums have been produced. And it's more dance pop. So let's hear the Ryan Adams version of that same. Baby, I'm just gonna shake. Shake it off, shake it off. Heartbreak is gonna break. And the fake is gonna fade. Baby, I'm just gonna shake it all. So obviously completely counter the Swift version. It's lyrically similar, but so melancholy, and the treatment is so melancholy. It really is representative of Ryan Adams as a performer. He's a great musician. I'm trying to separate the music from the man in Ryan Adams quite a bit. But this makes me think, I always think a lot about, why did he make the choice to cover this whole album? Was he just trying to ride the coattails of Taylor Swift? Did he ask her permission? Like, he must have. He must have gotten her blessing to do it.
He doesn't need it, but...
He doesn't need it.
He doesn't need it.
That's wild to me.
But he has to pay 100% of the songwriter royalties. She wrote the song, regardless of what he brings to it. But he does not technically need her permission.
Yeah, he credits just, her.
He has to credit. Yeah, he's got to credit and pay, right?
Do you have any other
other
samples from this?
Sure. So
it's a really great album.
I have samples from this song. I don't have samples from ever.
Yeah, that's cool.
So this is from the verse section.
Okay.
Taylor first. I stay out too late. Got nothing in my brain. That's what people say.
Mm-hmm. That's what people say. Mm-hmm. I stay out too late. Got nothing in my brain. That's what people say. That's what people say. Go on too many days. I can make them stay. That's what people say. That's what people say. Now, as I'm listening to it, I can hear Swifties dying inside, because it does like take the wind out of the sails of this like driving pop song and just really strips it back.
It's not just that. And I don't think this is a bad thing. I will say it is not the same melody. So it has the same lyrics.
Sure.
It has the same rhythm for the most part. I stay out too late. But the I stay out too late, he's I stay out too late. It's one note.
It
bears no melodic resemblance. It is essentially, I mean, this could be a case where he would say, you know what? I only used half your tune.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's fighting that battle.
No.
If I were him and I was Me Too, I don't know anything about writing items. I wouldn't fight that battle if I'd just been Me Too'd either. But the melody has been completely recomposed, which I think if you're a Swiftie and you love Shake It Off, you're not happy about.
Well, I think that, and it's just the whole vibe, this whole album is darker and more melancholic and it's not danceable. Like there are some tracks that are more up than this one in its interpretation, but overall, it's not. It's much more subdued. And that's why I really like it. To me, this is like rainy day music, and Taylor Swift 1989 is not rainy day
music.
You say
rainy day. I almost wonder if it's midnight.
Yeah.
Right? Her album Midnights is supposed to be like Nachtmusik in the German, like nighttime. Mm. This feels like that to me.
It feels like
I'm still awake doing whatever at 2 a.m. and I have this song on, whereas 1989 is not that. The original.
Midnights is a fantastic album that I think 10 years from now, we're going to look back at Midnights the same way we look at Folklore as like
Or as 1989.
Or as 1989. Or really, I mean, I'm going to go crazy about Taylor Swift.
I think we're going to do a Taylor episode one day. Okay, so one interesting thing I'll say before we move on is the idea of the album 1989 as being her birth year.
Mm.
He is, unless I'm wrong, significantly older than her.
Yeah.
What does 1989 mean to him? What part of his youth does that represent?
Right.
Right? Because she's using their sort of 80s nostalgia. The song has like a saxophone hook in it. Like that's a very not 2014 sound to be having as the baseline of your song. It's retrospective in a lot of ways. It is for him too, but 1989 as a concept might represent something different. I'm not knowing this album myself, I wouldn't know, but that's an interesting question.
It's wild to think because they're stylistically as artists so different. Like of all the albums to cover, why this one? And why, like 1 year after it was originally put out, like why? And I can't, I mean, I've looked not too deeply, but to try to find his motivation if he ever said in an interview, and he isn't really a forward. He doesn't like do a lot of publicity stuff. Like he just doesn't. Yeah. So I can't find an answer. So if you know, listeners, if you know why Ryan Himes made this choice, please write in and tell us.
Ryan, just write in yourself. Ryan. Let us know. I have the last word here.
Last one.
We know I like the Beatles. This comes from Help, 1965.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
A little known song.
Little known song. So
deep cut called Yesterday.
The second to last track on the album, which inexplicably is not the last track. After this is Dizzy Miss Lizzy, like
so
a
dumb
hard rock cover. I'm like, what are you guys doing? End the album with this. And this song is the beginning of a new era, really, of the Beatles.
Sure.
I have to say, every time I hear the song, I like it more, which is to say, I didn't start off liking it all that much. It's all kind right. of, it's slow, but every time I hear it, I learn something about songwriting.
It's pretty beautiful.
Beautiful. I know you know where I'm going with this, Nicole. Listeners, I don't know where I'm putting this sidetrack. The sidetracks go in the sequencing weirdly. You, depending on what you've learned about me, may or may not be able to predict where I'm going next.
Yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
All my troubles seem so far away. Now it seems as though they're here to stay.
This comes from Boyz II Men's second album, 2, 1994. I'm going to just play a couple clips without comment.
Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I believe in yesterday. Oh, I had to go.
Oh, I said I wasn't going to comment. Remember how I pointed out that Sublime added a line? Mm-hmm. They also add a line at the end that doesn't exist in the original. Here's the ending of the original song.
Oh, I believe
I don't think they needed that extra line.
You don't think they needed the Wanya extreme emotionality at the end there?
I am going to say something really controversial.
Do it.
I like the Boyz II Men version better.
I like the Boyz II Men version better also. And I've said, like, this is a song, my starting point of Yesterday is not as high as others. I mean, I think some of the Beatles songs are some of my favorite all-time songs. Yesterday's a beautiful song, but the Boyz II Men version is just magic
it's
to me.
Magic. And I don't really like Paul McCartney's voice.
Oh yeah, that's controversial. I love Paul McCartney's voice.
I mean, like, I guess, but I mean,
what about when he's screaming?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, that's him doing his kind of mousy kind
of George. More of a George girl.
Okay, we're going to have some conversations because my favorite Beatle is also George. But
yeah,
Paul McCartney, like, and that got to get you into my life. Like, his voice.
Yeah,
oh my,
that's good.
But
Ringo's going to outlive them all, by the way.
He will, but his voice will not.
No.
But the Boyz II Men version, yeah.
It's
boom.
So good.
I would not. I'm not making assertions about which versions necessarily of these songs are better, but I do think this one, despite how good the original is, it's pretty doable to make the case that the Boyz II Men cover is
it's
superior
good.
Piece of music. Like, the song is Paul McCartney's song. Can't take that away from him.
Oh, for sure.
But the arrangement of this, and also, I don't know who the vocal arranger is of this. I don't know if it's Boyz II Men or one of them, but oh my gosh.
They're great. So listeners, let us know, what are some covers that we missed that are your favorite cover songs? Email us at nevermusicpod@gmail.com and we'll address your ideas in a mailbag episode coming up.
And we'll explain why we didn't include them, like why the Nine Inch Nails cover by Johnny Cash of Hurt is not on this list. Yeah, we know. You don't have to tell us about it. It's good. Very good.
Okay.
Nicole, can we do the outro credits acting like we're really self-conscious and really insecure as opposed to people who actually have voluntarily put themselves out on the internet?
Let's try it.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Vacher and me, Mark Pavanik. I also do some other stuff. I guess you could subscribe and leave us a rating and review, but I don't know really if we'll be allowed on the major platforms for distribution.
And if you could, like, if it's okay with you, could you let us know what you think? Because we're not really sure if this is working or not, and we really need your opinion to, like, make sure it's okay. We're Never Music Pod on all the major platforms. We're not sure if we're going to stick with that title, but, you know, if you have a better one, if you could tell us, that'd be awesome. You can email us, if you have time, at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. We're thinking about doing, like, an episode with all of your comments and your letters and your notes. So if it's okay with you, if you could email us some, that would be awesome. If you have time, and we'll answer them on air.
If the podcast still exists.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.